Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 14th of April, 2021. Almost made it 2020 again. Not that 2021 has been all that great either. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Action-packed, as always. Action-packed, stacked, and racked, and ready to go. A lot of positive emails about Kevin Moss's song, I'm a Victim, set to I'm a Pepper. He's a Pepper. Check it out. It's at the end of yesterday's podcast if you haven't heard it. That means you've been cheating and haven't been listening all the way to the end. I suspect at least snippets of it will get lots of play on this pod as we go forward as appropriate. Speaking of as appropriate, don't forget about the inappropriate, the curse program, the curse pod at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast every Saturday morning in your ears, in your face. God, I need a hype man so bad. Any Jeromes out there? I'm perfectly ready to be Morris Day. Ah, baby. Like I said, lots of things to get about, but as it is Wednesday is the day we play our pre-recorded ad with our lovely sponsor, Ronnie McMullen from GetTheTea.com, and as such, here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me on the phone is Ronnie McMullen. He's proprietor of Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. He's going to tell us about all the great specials they have going this month, the month of April. How are you doing, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I could complain, but I'm not going to because it does no good. And actually, I'm in a pretty good mood. Got lots of energy, lots of pep in my step. And that is in no small part due to Life Change Tea. You've got some great specials running in addition to the tea at getthetea.com. Tell us what you got for April.
You go to the front page of getthetea.com. You scroll down. It'll be right there. The first one is bee pollen and tea. So bee pollen, it's all organic. And it's off the boards what this does for you. It would be a four-hour show if I told you what bee pollen does for your body. It's that powerful. So that's on special. And then, of course, don't forget to put the coupon code in to get free shipping. And then we also have a probiotic and a prebiotic, which a lot of people take antibiotics, which biotic is basically a term for life. So you're saying anti-life, not trying to slam. But so when you say probiotic, you're pro-life. So anyway, we have a pro-prebiotic and colostrum pills and tea, and that's on special. And again, the promo code. So that is our specials for the month.
Great specials, great product, really makes a difference and gives you that pep in your step. Don't forget promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout and click apply because otherwise you'd just be spinning your wheels. Ronnie McMullen, have a wonderful April. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Love Ronnie McMullen. Now let's get on with the show. Lots of things going on in the world, as always. It is just a crazy news day. There's breaking news right now, as a matter of fact. As of 7 minutes ago, at this moment, James O'Keefe is tweeting out parts of videos where they got undercover stings on CNN employees. God, these people, you know, they're shameless about it. That's what I suppose is the most shocking. I get it. I know that they're biased. I know that they're in on it. I know that they love Democrats and hate Republicans, and the Orange Man bad really just burst out any semblance of a barrier between those two things and any sort of recognizable professional ethics. That he just obliterated it. But they're so brazen about it. That they're so brazen about it lets you know how deep in the media culture that mentality is, to be perfectly honest with you. That they're so open about it means that they're not even confronted by anybody in a professional setting who says, yeah, I get it. We're liberal and we're biased, but we should probably try to be fair occasionally. Or, yeah, I get it. We're liberal and we're biased, but maybe not be so obvious about it. Or maybe we should, I don't know, try to cover some things occasionally. Because they ate a lot of crow. I'll put it in a compliant way, in a family-friendly way. They're eating a lot of crow in the Trump years. They did. They ate a lot of crow. They reported things that were provably false. Now, they didn't eat as much crow as they had ordered or they had deserved. There certainly was a lot more that they just kind of ignored. They would issue corrections on the website, and that would be it. It wouldn't get mentioned on air, or the correction in the newspaper a week later, or in some cases, like that bogus Donald Trump said, you'll be a hero sort of story. If you go manufacture these votes and you'll be a national hero. That story, it took them 2 or 3 months to correct whatever it was. So, you know, there's still some crow in the pipeline. But they have this willingness to just blatantly say whatever the hell they want. And this first part of the video, and there's going to be more in the website if you want to see these, is exposecnn.com from Project Veritas. Our focus was to get Trump out of office. A director at at CNN told them, admitted that they were propaganda. Quote, I came to CNN because I wanted to be a part of that. The focus was to get Trump out of office. That's an activist. That's what activists do. That is not what journalists do. And in that pursuit, you can see how all of these things that made no sense, that were anonymously sourced at best, not even firsthand anonymously sourced. It's not, remember the controversy in manufactured controversy by the Atlantic newspaper, where they had, or not magazine, where they had a story about how Donald Trump in Paris didn't want to go to this funeral for U.S. servicemen because they died and they're losers and it's raining and I don't want to go out there because it's raining and those people are losers. That ran everywhere. Now, everybody who was on that trip, who was in a position to have been in the room with the president of the United States, said it didn't happen. Not only did they didn't pull the, well, I didn't hear him say that. They pulled the, it did not happen. There was no one else who could have been in the room at some point, maybe ducked out and there's some advisor and he was just in there alone. And they said, yeah, it could have happened. It was straight up, this did not happen. And it didn't matter. The Atlantic is still standing by their story, even though they have no proof of it. One anonymously, tangentially connected, allegedly, because we don't know who it is since it's anonymous, source saying, this is what he said. He didn't want to go out there. He didn't want to fly out there. We even have the military on record saying that Marine One, the presidential helicopter, couldn't fly in that weather. It had a very low ceiling. It would have been dangerous, and driving out there would have been a security risk because it was like an hour away and you're in a foreign country. So, no, not going to go. We recommend against going. We don't want the president to go there. It's too big of a risk. And still, the Atlantic is sticking by their story. So that CNN is out there with these reporters. These are the people they caught. And if these people are this open and this brazen with, presumably James O'Keefe has some sort of insider, right? And it's a hidden body camera. It literally broke as I was getting on the air, so I haven't had time to read the story, just to see the first video that was released. But if presumably James O'Keefe had somebody on the inside of CNN, because it's even worse if they don't. If it's that they just approached these CNN employees in bars and restaurants at lunchtime, which is where this is happening, which leads me to believe that it's people you work with. You go to lunch with people you work with. You go out for drinks after work with people you work with. That's where it's being filmed. So I assume it was some sort of insider whistleblower thing going on. But if it's not, that means that they're this brazen with near complete strangers. They're just, our focus was to get Trump out of office. I came to CNN because I wanted to be a part of that. If you're willing to say that to a complete stranger, then how deep is your bias? If you're willing to say that with a coworker, a colleague, a new one coming in, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, excited to be working at CNN, thinking we're going to do some good, we're going to inform some people, even though maybe they weren't there with the best of intentions, whatever it is. If you're willing to be that open about it, how secure do you have to be in your job? How secure do you have to be in your job to know that ethics and standards play no role in your life, in your profession? Nothing whatsoever. It's just straight up, you could, we're liberal activists. Welcome to the team. I assume you're a liberal activist too, because you're here. It kind of acknowledges that CNN knows that they only hire liberal activists under the guise of journalism. But it's amazing because it's not just what you will hear in these tapes. And I'll try to capture it throughout the show, but it'll be tough to do. But you'll hear those tapes. They're on social media now. They'll likely be all over Fox tonight. It's nothing you didn't know already. It's just bizarre to hear it put in such blunt terms by people who are supposed to be, at least on the surface, denying these sorts of things. Yeah, we're out there. So I didn't plan on talking about that at all, but it was just literally happening. And I'm like, you're kidding me. This is what they said. And then, of course, that's what they said. If you work in CNN, if you spend all day in that newsroom, in that environment, that's what you hear. That's likely why you're there. I don't think anybody who's like really a serious journalist, I really care about ethics, I want impartiality, I'm going in and I'm going to report the truth, damn it, wherever it shall go, I will speak truth to power. And then after a couple of months inside CNN, you're suddenly finding yourself a drooling, mouth-frothing liberal lunatic. I don't think that happens. I think people who apply at CNN, not many conservatives going, I'm going to go get a job at CNN because I'm going to be the voice of reason. I'm going to really bring the other side to this. They don't want the other side there. They've made it abundantly clear. They have no interest in the other side there. So it's liberals in, liberals out. Shows you how deep the bias and activism has gotten. I'll be curious to watch all of these videos because James O'Keefe says it's part one. Who knows how many parts there are, but I can guarantee you that CNN won't bother to report on it. Even their media reporter, the weeble with arms, Brian Stelter, not interested in this story. And to any extent that they address it, it will be that this is a heavily edited video conversation. You can't tell anything from it, taken out of context. All of the things they say about videos from Project Veritas while reporting on anything anonymously leaked to liberals, on conservatives, on Republicans, on the Trump administration. Remember that phone call that was leaked from her supposed best friend or whatever she was supposed to be, of Melania Trump talking about the Christmas decorations around the White House and how it was kind of a pain and she didn't particularly enjoy doing it and whatever else it was. They ran that like it was a 100-meter dash on CNN. They did the qualifyings, the semifinals, the finals. They ran everything. They ran the regional final. They ran that thing so much. Needed an oil change when they were done. They ran that thing so much. Then when video comes out that makes liberals look bad, CNN's statement was that it is inappropriate to take things out of context and situations where people are recorded without their knowledge. It's a different standard. It's not heavily edited. It's edited for effect. Everything you see on CNN is edited for effect. They just pretend that it isn't. So be aware of that. We're going to get into a lot of things today, including the pausing in the United States of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And if you just watched the reporting of this and you'd gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you could be a little scared right now. Wait a second. Somebody injected something into me and now they're saying that they don't want that injected into anybody else again until they figure out why people are having this blood clot issue? My God, what is going on? We must figure this out. And now, and you're sitting there going, am I going to die? Am I going to get sick? Am I going to suffer blood clots? What's going on? Well, the perspective that the media isn't going to give you is quite simple. There are about 6.6 million people who've gotten the Johnson & Johnson injection, including a friend of mine, Brian. Different Brian's never been on this show. Maybe he was on this show once. But he got the Johnson & Johnson shot over the weekend. Said it made him very tired. Got it on Friday at a Walmart in Virginia as a walk-up. And he was very tired for 2 days. Just very fatigued. And that was it. He's one of 6.6 million, apparently, Americans who've gotten this shot. So should he be worried? The answer is no. Why? Because this pause is being administered after six adverse reactions. Six people out of 6.6 million people. Even I've seen low estimates down to 4 million. It's still an astronomically odds. Six cases of blood clotting after getting the shot. I don't think any of them have died. They just had blood clots. Not a pleasant experience, I imagine. You don't want it. I don't wish it on anybody. But I'm just saying, a little perspective. It's fine that the Johnson & Johnson shot is paused. You want to see if there's a connection. You want to study people's blood and check out what's going on. It's perfectly fine and acceptable. It's the irresponsible way in which it is being reported that I have a problem with, that you should have a problem with. The New York Times story, Johnson & Johnson vaccinations halt after rare clotting cases emerge. Oh, wait, you don't know that. Well, then you sit there and you read the subheadline, federal health officials call for a pause in the use of Johnson & Johnson's coronavirus vaccine while they study serious illnesses that have developed in six American women. Okay, now I don't want bad things to happen to women, but again, if you aren't clear in the story, you aren't clear in the coverage, and cable news is much worse, then you could be giving everybody a panic. My friend Brian, for example, I don't know this for a fact, and actually knowing him, I doubt he's too concerned about it, but it's a problem, could be a problem. It's an issue that has arisen in six women. Okay, well, six is a very low number, and women is not what he is. And it's women, biological women, not identify as women. So, again, it's probably transphobic to even say that. Just giving that perspective, though, amps down the panic. And you know what the result of amping down the panic does? It means that people will tune into another TV station. People will not read your next story, will not come back to read this, the updates to the story, or seek out more stories by you on this. The FDC, the Food and Drug, or FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, according to earlier reports, now maybe this has changed, because I think official word is that they now recommend, in addition to the just the government in general, that they have paused this. They were going to convene a meeting tomorrow to discuss it. NBC News had reported the FDA will convene an advisory committee meeting Wednesday to decide what to do next on the job. Like, Wednesday, is today a holiday? You want a prime example of how awful government is and how your government run healthcare will be? Take a look at this situation. They're trying to cause a panic. And even if the panic is baseless, responsible entities will move as quickly as possible to try to allay the fears about a panic or whatever about the panic. But our government works at its own pace, because who's going to hold the FDA accountable? They said, well, we'll get together tomorrow and discuss this. We'll try and figure out what to do about this tomorrow. That special April the 13th holiday that I'm unaware of. Now imagine it's a matter of life and death for you or someone you love, and government is the sole gatekeeper for your health care. Are you going to trust these people with that information, with that power, with that authority, knowing full well that you'd just be one of 330 million people who are complaining that they can't get what they want. They probably researched it on WebMD. They don't know what they're talking about. Oh, geez, they want this treatment. Well, I'm sorry. It's too expensive. You can't have it. You're going to trust those people with your health insurance? See, private health insurance has an incentive to spend a little more up front to keep you alive. Why? Because the longer you're alive, the longer you'll pay premiums. It may sound callous and cold, but it's no more callous or cold than the federal government saying, well, the longer they're alive, the more crap we have to pay for to cover them. It's never framed that way in the media, but it should be, because that's exactly how it is. In all of these scenarios, that's exactly how these bureaucrats view you. You're a number on a page at best if the automatic computer program that decides to allow or deny or do whatever didn't already spit you out and say no thank you. Keep that in mind next time some liberal promises you single-payer health care. We all pay singularly. So I'm looking, one person has died and one person in critical condition. Now, correlation is not necessarily causation. These people could have been prone to blood clots. There's a rare blood clot. This is from Reuters. U.S. FDA official said one death reported due to rare blood clot after Johnson & Johnson vaccine. One patient is in critical condition. Okay. U.S. officials say healthcare providers who see with either a low blood platelet count or blood clots should establish whether individual has recently been vaccinated. People who got Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine more than a month ago, risk of blood clot event is very low at this time, according to FDA officials. It's like they're trying to scare people off of this. Now, here in Maryland, one count out in I think it's not Gaithersburg. It's whatever it is. There's a city that is now, there's a drive-up place. They're switching to the Pfizer vaccine. So if you're in line to get the Pfizer or to get a vaccine, Hagerstown, it's Hagerstown. I just saw the story. They've switched to Pfizer. So if you're in line and you're like going, I'm not going to go get the vaccine now because the Johnson & Johnson is completely out of circulation. But again, the bigger perspective is six adverse reactions out of 6.6 million people. Six out of 6.6 million. That is a rounding error. That is nothing. So if you've gotten it, relax, because I know how the human brain works. You can start convincing yourself you've got all sorts of things going on. Suddenly, you're like, oh, as soon as the first, I'm even subject to that. Even I am subject to that. Mwah. Yes, moi. I sat there after the COVID first came out, and every time I sniffled or coughed, I'm like, I've got it, I'm dying, like the first weeks of this. And then, like, no, we're not dying. But it works. Your brain does funny things. So relax. If you've gotten the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you're fine. These reactions happen pretty quickly after this. Not so quickly that it was immediate, so they can't necessarily say it was this, but they're out of an abundance of caution. I don't have a problem with the FDA stepping in and saying we want to take a closer look at this. I have a problem with the way the media is reporting it to try and scare the hell out of people to get them to tune in to find out if they've just had a ticking time bomb injected into their shoulder. That's the problem here. Correlation is not causation. Media is causation most of the time. We'll get to the bottom of this. We will. Don't worry. Honestly, if you wanted to discourage people from getting the vaccine, the government couldn't have done any better. I'm getting emails from people. I'm glad I didn't get the vaccine yet. I didn't. There are three vaccines, four vaccines, whatever it is, varying degrees of efficacy. Pfizer and Moderna have not had problems. But I certainly understand the sentiment. And it's not just because of the way the government is handling this. It's because of the way that the media is handling this. They're waiting outside. Will somebody faint? Can we get some B-roll of somebody faint? And how many videos have you seen of somebody fainting after getting the vaccine? And then 5 minutes later, they're fine. Well, the vaccine is not get an injection and then pass out. Your brain isn't processing it that quickly. It is your brain processing what's going on. And some people are unnerved by getting the injection, and so they faint. Okay, I can get the dizziness, I can get whatever. You inject something into your body, and you're going to have a reaction, and then it passes in a couple of minutes. That had been the crux of the story so far. I mean, what will the long-term effects be of the dizziness that comes after? Nothing, probably. But you're dealing with something that's 95% effective. You're dealing with something that's 95% effective that, depending on your age, is either 5% fatal or 0.2% fatal. So it's a cost-benefit analysis that you have to do for yourself. But this irresponsible way of covering it bastardizes that process. And it's not by accident. They want you to watch. They want you to tune in. They want to go back to that website and see what they're saying now. I understand why people are apprehensive about it. I don't want to get a shot. It seems rushed to me. Sure, I get that. That's your choice. I would point out that there's one side that really doesn't want you to have that choice, and one side that says you can have that choice. You have, not that you can have that choice. They say that you actually do have that choice. It's your choice. So the panic and freak out is always disproportional because it's good for ratings. Ooh, a vaccine has been, I got to tune into cable news and find out what's going on. Yeah, and then they want you to stay. So rather than just say, this is not a big deal, this is okay, this is normal, this is, you know, it's probably nothing, but even if it is something, it's six people out of 6.6 million, you can calm down. If you've already got the shot, you're fine. Don't panic. Don't try and drain your blood. Don't be calling your doctor, going to the emergency room, going, doctor, am I going to die? I feel like I've got a blood clot somewhere. Please help me. No. I meant to get to this yesterday. I love this story for a very simple reason. It exposes a media lie, a media narrative, a media fraud that I don't think they know that they're exposing. NBC News has somebody on staff called Brandy Zadronsky or Zadroni or whatever, however you pronounce the last name that's spelled Z-A-D-R-O-N or O-Z-N-Y. Zadrozny, whatever. Her beat is to cover white nationalism, the extreme right. They don't have anybody on the Antifa beat because, you know, Antifa's just an idea that's burning down Brooklyn Park and burning down Portland, and riots in Portland and marching through the streets of Washington, D.C. and marching through the streets of New York City and everything. It's just an idea. It's not a real thing. What are you talking about? But Brandy's beat is to dox as many people as she can. She's done deep dive exposés on NBC News' dime to find people who have posted QAnon things on websites, for example, anonymously. She wants to find out who these people are. Now, the overarching narrative of the left is that white supremacy is everywhere. It's coming for you. If you look out your front window right now, there's probably a couple of white supremacists hiding in your bushes waiting to come and get you right now. Don't go near the window. They're on to you. They know you're listening. But this report undercuts her existence. It really does. It's not very often somebody reports on something that is essentially a red flag to their bosses saying, my job is unnecessary, and the next round of layoffs, I should probably be among them. The headline, White Lives Matter rally flops as hardly anyone shows up. She tweeted it out. New from me, nationwide white supremacist rallies flop. Went from white supremacist to White Lives Matter. The subheadline, poor turnout underscores how the country's unpopular and disorganized extremist movement have been driven underground. Say, she's covering her bases there. It's driven underground. That's why we can't find anybody. That's why we can't find these people. It's not that they don't exist and they're a boogeyman wholly created by the liberal media to try and scare people. It's that they're underground. They're super, super, duper, ooper good. It's a kind of delusion that I suffer from occasionally. I wish I suffered from. Like you watch a movie where they've got the super assassin, it's James Bond or Matt Damon or whoever it is. Vin Diesel, whoever it is. They're the super duper spy assassin, and they can get in anywhere and they can get to anybody. It doesn't matter if they're kept 80 feet underground in a really thick vault. The CIA in movies, or spy agency, any spy agency in movies, can get to you. And you sit there and you kind of believe it. You're like, well, why don't we take out the Ayatollah? Why don't we take out Osama bin Laden? Why don't we take out these terrorists? Why don't we do it? Because nothing like this exists in real life. It's a movie. It's fake. It's all fake. Just like this idea that white supremacy is legion in this country. Just because liberals insist that it is the bedrock founding principle of this country doesn't make it so. And just because they call everybody with whom they disagree a white supremacist or white nationalist doesn't make it so. So when some people try to organize an event like this and nobody shows up, it's not because they're secretly underground. They've burrowed deep. They're probably in government and certainly in police officers and police precincts right now. And they're not going to expose themselves because they're not ready to be exposed. No, they don't exist. So her whole story is basically telling her boss that I'm an unnecessary employee. It says in semi-private encrypted chats, neo-Nazis and other far-right extremists planned rallies in dozens of cities Sunday to promote their racist movements and spread their ideologies to larger audience, hyped by organizers as an event that would make, quote, the whole world tremble. The rallies ran into a major problem. Hardly anyone showed up. The White Lives Matter rallies, the first major real-world organizing efforts by white supremacists since 2018, were planned on encrypted app Telegram after many aligned groups were alleged to have taken part in the January 6th storming of the U.S. Capitol. If you noticed anything in what I've read thus far, is anything resembling proof of this mass conspiracy? The poor showing underscores how the country's unpopular and disorganized extremist movements have been driven underground by increased scrutiny from the media. See, she's the hero. Law enforcement agencies and far-left activists who infiltrate their private online spaces and disrupt their attempts to communicate and organize. Oh, the liberals, the Antifa mob, they're the heroes here. It's not that it's possibly, you know, two guys in their underpants in their basement deciding to mess with someone like Brandy, this reporter. Somebody going, you know what, let's see how far they'll take this. Let's see if they believe this stuff. We'll just create some chatter and go for it. Go on down and see what they come up with. I love it. But nobody showed up. Nobody showed up. Few White Lives Matter marchers showed up Sunday, but anti-racist and anti-fascist groups gathered just the same. Because they're always ready. They're always down for something. In Raleigh, North Carolina, a small crowd of Antifa and anti-racist protesters gathered at the park where the White Lives Matter march was planned. They marched around downtown behind a large white sign that read, "We accept your surrender." Why is the sign white? Racist. The lackluster events were documented by live streams and photos posted to Twitter. It's a whole bunch of leftists going, "Where are the racists? We've come. We were promised there would be punch and pie and racists, and there are no racists." And none of them will make the connection of maybe it's not as prevalent of a problem as we've been led to believe, as we've been leading people to believe. In Philadelphia, activists tweeted photos of a counter-protest picnic with pizza. In New York, over a dozen counter-protesters stood seemingly unopposed across the street from Trump Tower, where a White Lives Matter rally was expected. It just wasn't there. It didn't happen. But NBC News is not about to let the facts stand in the way of a good story. The White Lives Matter rallies were disrupted in several cities, blah, blah, blah. Organizers in several cities canceled the events because of sabotage by Antifa activists.
Huh?
I thought that they were super proud and super out loud about whatever it was. And no, Antifa's the hero. They managed to prevent this horrible, horrible white racist group from coming out. In fact, she kind of says it. About 36 of those charged talking about the January 6th event are members and associated with the Proud Boys, the pro-Trump street fighting gang, and the Oath Keepers militia group. Both are accused of coordinating between far-right groups, and they face the most serious federal charges related to January 6th, including conspiracy to breach the Capitol. And this is where she says Antifa is the hero. Beyond legal consequences, self-described Antifa activists, because, well, you don't take their word for it? They're on your team. Self-described, how can they be Antifa? That's just an idea. Self-described Antifa activists have made it costly to be associated with far-right and racist groups, many of them using online sleuthing to match participants at extremist rallies to their real-life identities and employers. Mainstream online platforms where extremists were once welcomed have also tightened their policies about violent extremist content and group. Throughout this entire piece, she cites Antifa as the heroes. She cites Antifa as a positive. And currently, Antifa is involved in riots across the country yet again. Why? Because a police officer accidentally shot and killed someone. Accidentally shot and killed someone. There's no other way to look at that video, that body cam footage. But that doesn't matter to NBC News and Brandi Zadrozny. She's down with the cause. She's got her beat, and she's going to find it whenever. This reminds me, again, of the CNN story. If you look for only one thing, and you're only willing to see one thing, you're going to find that one thing. If you live in a world where only one point of view exists and only one set of ideas is acceptable and true, and anything to the contrary is somehow painted as disinformation, guess what you're not going to find? Anything that contradicts your worldview, your political philosophy, the view of the, for you, what do they say, that the unless you're the lead dog on the sled, the view never changes. Unless you're an honest human being in journalism, which is a stretch and they don't really seem to exist, but unless you're one of those, the view never changes. The narrative never changes. The facts, well, you can just ignore some of them. Big, big white supremacy rally this weekend. Antifa's mobilized in full force. And oh, maybe they didn't show up because they were scared of Antifa. Yeah, who isn't frightened to death of a 115-pound, 6-foot-tall, gangly, never-kissed-a-girl white guy with an anarchy symbol painted on his T-shirt? Who doesn't live in fear of that guy? These people are nuts. Yet these people control more than we could ever know. Yeah, there is riot news. It always seems like there's riot news. It feels like a rerun sometimes when you look at riots, because Portland, doesn't matter what's going on. They're out there ready to riot, ready to confront police, and police are absolutely standing at the ready to let them, to get out of their way, to not be interested. It's kind of funny to watch this happen, but hey, we don't live in Portland, so who cares? If anybody still lives in Portland, last one out, leave the lights on so at least people can see from a distance that there used to be a city there. So pathetic. The situation up there with the shooting of Dante Wright, the killing of Dante Wright, it's not a murder. If you've seen the body cam footage, you know it's not a murder. It was a dumb accident. Yes, you want to charge manslaughter and make that case? You might be able to. I don't know. But if you want heads to roll and you demand people that take to the streets and demand justice and everything and anything you can possibly imagine, it is not the case. It hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped the left from trying to capitalize on it. It hasn't stopped the left-wing freak out. The female police officer who shot Dante Wright was trying to take out her taser. She grabbed the wrong thing. That is being focused on as this is a failure in training. This is a fail. This is an outrage. This is a that. This is the other thing. Okay. Fine, all well and good, but it's also a failure on Dante's part to comply with a lawful police order. He apparently had warrants out for his arrest. Police were going to take him into custody, as is not only their right to do, it is their job to do. And he didn't want to go, so he fought them. They were about to cuff him, and he fought back, pushed them away, jumped into the car, tried to drive away. That is when the officer pulled out what she thought was a taser. Why do I say it's a taser? Or she thought it was a taser? Because on the video, she says, taser, 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 which is what you do if you're a police officer, to let other police officers know you're about to discharge your taser. Either so they can let go, get out of the way, or whatever, or be aware in case they get shocked so they know what's going on. Problem is, she pulled her gun, shot Dante once. Now, if she was trying to kill him, thing about a taser is you pull the trigger once, the electrodes are deployed, the shock is administered. There's no multiple, you don't pull the trigger multiple times on a taser. Doesn't do any good. Still shocking somebody. Pulling the trigger again isn't going to double shock him. It doesn't up the voltage. Doesn't do anything like that. So if she was trying to shoot him, she would have shot more than once. She clearly thought she was pulling the taser. It wasn't. It's her fault. It's her responsibility. It's also Dante's fault to a certain extent that he was resisting arrest and fighting. The chief of police up there, well, actually, let's listen to the protesters, the protesting mob in Portland, just to give you a sense, because you're sitting here and they're like, okay, this is perfectly rational. People are not, leftists are not perfectly rational creatures in any way, shape, or form. See if you can make out, it's a very short clip, but see if you can make out what the BLM Antifa mob in Portland is chanting in this. Every city, every town, burn the precincts to the ground. And you think, well, that's BLM Antifa. That's their brand. They may be trying to sell some T-shirts with that printed on it. Well, this is what Rashida Tlaib, elected member of Congress, sadly from the district I grew up in, tweeted yesterday. And it still stands up today. 24 hours later, she has not reconsidered it. She has not deleted it. Twitter has not placed a warning label on it, factually inaccurate, whatever. After seeing the body cam footage, after knowing what had happened, Rashida Tlaib took to Twitter and said, quote, "It wasn't an accident. Policing in our country is inherently and intentionally racist. Dante Wright was met with aggression and violence. I am done with those who condone government-funded murder. No more policing, incarceration, and militarization. It can't be reformed. Get rid of all police. They can't be reformed. It's got to go. No more police. So no more gun control laws then, Congresswoman? Because, you know, you kind of would need to enforce those laws. I'm just saying. But no, that's it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. This is the mindset of the left after clearly an accident. The police chief out there in this city in Minneapolis, out in the suburb of Minneapolis, is a guy named Tim Gannon. And just to show you what the police have found. Now, they have, if they're lying, then they would be held accountable. But we've seen the video. We know that they're not lying. He talks about exactly what happened and what a rational, logical human being would think about seeing what they saw. Here's his explanation.
During this encounter, however, the officer drew their handgun instead of their taser. For informational purposes, we train with our handguns on our dominant side and our taser on our weak side. So if you're right-handed, you carry your firearm on your right side and you carry your taser on the left. This is done purposefully and is trained. As I watch the video and listen to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I viewed and the officer's reaction and distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge.
An accidental discharge. Yeah. Caused in the heat of the moment because Dante Wright was trying to get away. And what are you supposed to do when a subject's trying to get away? Are you supposed to go, oh, well, they're not interested in going to jail today, therefore we're just going to let them go and maybe next time we'll get them. No, that's not the job of a police officer, as much as so many people would like it to be the job of a police. Actually, the people who would want that don't even want there to be police officers. They're supposed to subdue suspects. They're supposed to protect and serve we the public. If somebody's wanted for something, they're supposed to arrest them. You don't go, oh, well, he really doesn't want to go to jail today, so we're going to let him go, okay? That'll be fine. We'll get him later. Especially when you do have a taser available. You let that taser go. You use that taser. She grabbed the wrong thing. Horrible. Some can say unforgivable. If that's how you view it, that's fine. But in this third clip here, I want you to see what is up against, what reality is up against. This is that same chief of police, Tim Gannon, talking about how he was there at the riots. He saw firsthand the riots. And then you are going to hear reporters, alleged reporters, reporters in air quotes, try to correct him that it is not riots. Stores were looted. Police were assaulted. Stores burned. Things burned. Destruction was happening. And these reporters, these are the truth to power people, insist, no, 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 that's not a riot. This, dare I say 10 years ago, would have gotten everybody whose voice is discernible in this tape fired from their profession of journalism. This will likely get them a promotion and maybe some awards. Who knows? Listen to it for yourself.
Just so everybody's clear, I was front and center at the protest, at the riot. We did not. There was no riot.
It's not a riot. There's three or four voices there of reporters. Oh, don't do that. Don't. No. That was not a riot. That was not a riot. Well, riot has at least for now, a legal definition, and that what happened clearly met that threshold. But no, don't do that. It was not a riot. It was not a riot. It was just a mostly peaceful protest where people were looting GameStops, beauty salons, liquor stores, shoe stores, and whatever else somebody thought might have something that they wanted in the name of justice in there, where they smashed the windows, set the place on fire, took their stuff, went home, and then came back for more. That is justice, ladies. Oh, and don't forget about the launching fireworks at police, the launching of bricks and other projectiles at police. You know, that's not a riot. It's not a riot. Last year, we mocked MSNBC and I can't remember, Ali Velshi, where Ali Velshi's literally standing in front of a burning tire store and says, it's mostly peaceful. Mostly peaceful. The building is engulfed in flames behind him. No, I don't want you to get a wrong impression because this is mostly peaceful. And we mocked that. It was like, this is so absurd. This can't be true. Who would do it? And now here we are. Now this is where the world is. This is what's going on. Like, oh, wait, no. Reporters, that's not a riot. Yes, it is a riot. If it happened in front of your house, if it was in front of your building, if your stuff was being smashed up, I guarantee you that you would be calling it a riot. You wouldn't say, hello, 911, what's your emergency? I have a group of mostly peaceful protesters minding their own business by and large. I mean, some of them are trying to throw bricks at me and set my house on fire. But other than that, it's mostly peaceful. So when you get a chance, no rush, if you could maybe send a squad car by to kind of just take a look at the situation, I would really appreciate it, okay? No, not a single one of these people would do that. If you remember last year, there was that one liberal activist who was cheering on the burning of Minneapolis, saying, yes, burn it all down, burn it all down. And then a few hours later, they'd burned a grocery store or drugstore near his condo. And his tune had changed. What are you guys doing? This isn't the neighborhood that... What are you doing? This is not where you, the way you handle this. Don't burn down stuff in my neighborhood. It's all fun and games when it's somebody else's life ruined. It's ratings at that point. It's how sick these people are. I keep saying it, but it's only because it's true. I want to talk a little bit about COVID here and misinformation, because you know the left is still going after Ron DeSantis down in Florida. It's amazing. Michigan is off the charts in COVID cases. Governor Gretchen Whitmer is forgot to order a bunch of vaccines, so the state is short on vaccines. She asked for emergency vaccines. I don't think she's going to get it. It's been a mess, and it's the nation's hot spot right now, Michigan. Still have lockdowns, limits on occupancy and all that stuff. But you would barely know it by the way that the media is covering it. They barely mention her. When they do, they gloss over it pretty quickly. And she gave an interview the other day on CNN where she was able to claim that misogyny is reason for criticizing her. And of course, the CNN anchor said, well, of course it is, because you're a woman and that's just science. That's the level of journalism that we have. But in a day, I want you to listen to this clip. The New York Times has many, many podcasts. And one of their podcasts is hosted by somebody named Kara Swisher, I think is the name. Big time. They're all big time libs. There's no conservatives at the New York Times. She had on, now this was just published yesterday, she had on Michelle A. Williams, who is an epidemiologist at Harvard and a dean at Harvard University Medical School. And I want to tell you this headline first, just to give you the context. This is the headline from the Hill newspaper yesterday. Florida reports single-digit COVID-19 deaths for the first time in months. Single-digit. The total number of people who died in Florida the other day was 9. 7 were Americans, 2 were other people from places unknown. But 7 Americans, so 9, single day, under 10. That seems, especially if you're just watching the news, that's incredible. Because you would think, according to 60 Minutes and NBC and all every network you can, all the alphabet soups, you'd think Florida's just a killing field. It's just piles of bodies everywhere. It's Eric Idle walking down the street with a bell going, bring out your dead, or I guess it was John Cleese. But whoever it is, bring out your dead. I guess it wasn't even, whoever it was. You get the Monty Python reference. Now, on the same day that that was reported, and Michigan is exploding, Michelle Williams, Harvard dean and epidemiologist, and Kara Swisher, the New York Times podcast host, had a discussion about COVID and how awful Florida is, and in particular, it's Florida is awful because of Ron DeSantis.
Some people are saying that, like, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' response to the pandemic, which was reopening early, keep the economy going, maybe wasn't so bad after all, as Florida's unemployment rate is lower than states like New York and California, and the death rate is in line with the national average. What do you think of this argument?
You know, I think it's reckless. I'm just going to say there is this false dichotomy that health and wealth are two distinct opposing issues. And what I would say to DeSantis is the economic health and wellness of your state rests on your making strategic investments to enable and support all members of your state.
It's irresponsible to look at Florida and think that that's an indication of anything other than nothing, other than the horror show that it is. It's just awful. It's terrible. Florida, Florida, Florida. Ron DeSantis is awful. Ron DeSantis is terrible. He's killing people. Even though, as you pointed out, it's much, much better there than in most other states, particularly Democrat-controlled states that are still under lockdowns, under more restrictive lockdowns. Now, to a certain extent, California and New York are coming out of lockdowns a little bit, mostly because Andrew Cuomo's game of grab ass is coming back to bite him, and the calls for his resignation and the alleged impeachment investigation and the fact that he covered up COVID deaths. So he's kind of saying, okay, you can go be a little more free. And each time a new woman comes forward, you get a little more free. They're like four Cuomo accusers away from 100% occupancy. And out in California, Gavin Newsom is facing a recall election. So suddenly he's like, we need to get kids back in school. Not for the last year, just until they certified that last signature on the recall petition. Then suddenly he's all for getting kids back in school and no more lockdowns. And you can go ahead and dine. Remember, California, what, 3-4 months ago, was after telling restaurants, you can reopen, but only with outdoor seating. And restaurants poured thousands of dollars into outdoor seating. Then he said, we got to shut that outdoor seating. Like, there's no proof whatsoever that any spread comes from outdoor seating, but they didn't care. He screwed over all these people. That's why I think a lot of people were happy to sign the petition to recall him. That and the fact that he ignored his own orders and went to the most expensive restaurant in the country with friends for a friend's birthday. So the situation in blue states is horrible, horrible. It's been an abject failure. Lockdowns have not worked. Mask mandates have not worked. And weirdly, the states without them are doing much better. Why? We don't know because we're not allowed to ask the question. But Michelle Williams from Harvard and Kara Swisher from the New York Times still don't care. See, if Michelle Williams has her way, what she would do is not talk to Cuomo or Whitmer in Michigan or Gavin Newsom in California or any other Democrat-controlled states that are having massive outbreaks right now with lockdowns. She would like to take Ron DeSantis and put him in a re-education camp, because by every unit of measure, every metric possible, Florida is better than these other states, but still he's a Republican. That's the only explanation for what you're about to hear.
We should have, and we must be better prepared to attenuate these disparities.
Except that in the case of something like Ron DeSantis, these to them are acceptable risks, correct?
Yeah. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, I believe in the goodness of people, and I believe that Ron DeSantis would do well if we could just get him in a public health class for 3 weeks.
You're very confident.
And I have to believe that if one were able to realign his thinking about risks and bring compassion into his leadership through understanding the narrative and the data about how we can thrive while also caring for vulnerable populations and reducing disparities, we would be in a better place.
We must realign your thinking, comrade. Can you believe this? On the day that it's announced that 9 people in the state of Florida, only 7 of whom were Americans, died from COVID. 7. 9. Florida's horrible. And you're sitting there and you're going, what? What's going on with this? And it's, you recognize that it is narrative, narrative, narrative. Nothing else matters. Nothing will get in the way of the narrative. Now, just for fun, I want to go through and look at Florida, Michigan, and New York. Since that conversation took place, at least part in New York, and they ignore Michigan. So just new cases, new cases. Now, remember, Florida has a population of about 21 million. New York has a population of 19 million. And Michigan has a population around, we'll call it 10 million. So Florida, based on what you just heard, and based on what millions of people who subscribe to that New York Times podcast have just heard, should be the absolute worst. It should be a mess. It should be a disaster area. FEMA should be down there. Number of new cases, we'll just do average for the hell of it. Average new cases, 7-day average, 5,791 down in Florida. That's a 7-day rolling average. 5,700, we'll call it 5,800 just for fun. Michigan, a state with less than half the population of Florida, 7-day average of new cases, 7,377. Now, how can that be? That doesn't make any sense. Twice the people in Florida should mean 10 times the death because they have a Republican governor. They don't have mask mandates. Well, let's look at New York. New York, 7-day average, 7,101. Again, if you're playing the home game, that's about 1,000, 1,200 more per day than Florida. It doesn't make any sense unless you realize that the objective is the narrative. The narrative is the objective. It must be protected at all costs. Your reputation doesn't matter. Don't let facts stand in the way. Who gives a damn? Whatever it is, the narrative must be protected. Yesterday, again, I told you, 9 human beings lost their lives attributed to COVID down in the state of Florida. New York, 83. Seeing a disconnect here at all in what we're being told and what reality is yet? Because they're counting on you not looking it up. Now, in Michigan, the number of deaths is 14. Not bad. Not 9. Especially considering, again, Florida has more than double the population of the state of Michigan. Yet the paper of record, the old gray lady, all the news that's fit to misprint, is out there telling its millions of subscribers that Florida is the disaster, with no less than an expert from Harvard University telling you, oh, I would tell him he's got to be compassionate. He's terrible. He's the problem. No, no, he's not. Now, what accounts for some of this? Well, it's, again, simply put, the narrative. This is one of those stories where you're sitting there, you're going, you're kidding me, right? Lastly today, this headline from Food and Wine, foodandwine.com. You think, okay, if you sports, I can't escape politics anymore. I can't escape it in the movies. I can't escape it in the TV, but at least in the kitchen you can. And if you want to get recipes, you can escape this garbage, right? Just for a minute, please, Lord, give me mercy. Give me respite. No. Food and Wine has an article entitled, it's almost too stupid to read, but I'm going to read it. And I'm not making this up. The difference between yams and sweet potatoes is structural racism. I could have stopped right to finish it with me, and probably 90% of you would have said racism or something. Yes. The difference between yams and sweet potatoes is structural racism. The subheadline is the confusion goes all the way back to the transatlantic slave trade. What confusion? Who cares? There's sweet potatoes and there are yams. Some people mix them up. Tomato, tomato. Who cares? Is that a cherry tomato or a grape tomato? Oh, the difference is structural racism. No, just stop it. Stop it. And it goes through to detail this woman from Africa who's going to school over here, and she had to go to an African market to get real yams real sweet potatoes. I'm sorry. Again, I can't even keep track of this stuff because it's so damn stupid. But it is a very long article about how sweet potatoes and yams and people confusing them, that's structural racism. It can't just be that, you know, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. The words are interchangeable-ish. If you really want one, you'll find it. You know what you're doing. But if somebody's eating yams and thinks they're eating sweet potatoes, guess what? The world will continue revolving on its axis. We'll all survive. Maybe we shouldn't, if this is where we are. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. I appreciate the use of your ears. I'll see you tomorrow.
At the riot. We did not.
Don't do that.
There was
no riot.
There was.